Accession number 30631, Mr. Herbert Landsberg, Reel 3. Now, as you said, we're moving into 1939 now. Now, the first question I want to ask, you know, there's a reference here to half of your family had been taken away to concentration camps. Now, was that your uncles and cousins and nephews?
Well,
because the main ones seemed to have escaped.
Yes. My mother had three brothers. One was the one in who emigrated to France. Then Hermann lived in Liegnitz in eastern Germany, and he and his wife were taken, and we tried to find out, but nobody knew, not Belsen, because we got into Belsen with the army and had permission to look at the records, and we certainly didn't find the surname was Pfeiffer, no Pfeiffers in there, so we don't know. That's one family that been taken away. The French family were taken to Drancy, the French concentration camp, and handed over to the Germans, and you find it in... Did I show you this, this letter?
Again, they can't see in them. Carry on. Carry on.
Yes, you can see the...
They can't...
No.
What happened to these people, the French side of the...
The French
family... Well, the ones who went to France, they weren't French.
Well, it's very strange. The French family consisted of Elie and Suzanne. Elie was my mother's brother, you know, was interned in the First World War, and then married Suzanne, and they had three children, Eliane, Pierre, and Jacqueline. And Eliane was being taken care of and hidden by their nunu, by their wet nurse in the countryside. She was studying law at the time, but and she became afterwards became quite an important person in the French law organization, legal organization. And Pierre was in the French army. He was taken prisoner, and his mates were very decent, although they knew he was a Jew. They didn't let the prisoner organization, the war prisoner, know, so he was treated as an ordinary prisoner of war, and he came out after the war, of course, demoralized, but certainly alive. And the youngest one, Jacqueline, lived with her parents in a very nice area, and one day, when the Germans marched into Paris, she saw this kid. She was then about 12 or 11. She saw some German soldiers ill-treating some old people in the street. And she opened the window and shouted to them, "Sal Bosch!" And they knew enough French, the soldiers, to know what it means, rotten German bastards. And so they broke into the house and realized it was a Jewish family for some reason that took her parents away and her, Elie and Suzanne and the girl Jacqueline. And according to Elizabeth, who was a survivor of that family, Eliane got married later on, and she had three children, Elizabeth, Dominique, and Serge. And Elizabeth said they took them away and put them in a French concentration camp, Drancy, and then eventually, as it said in that letter that I gave you, you know, yes, that they were taken to Auschwitz. And that's the last, of course.
So they were presumably killed.
Yeah.
So, right, it's just I wanted to make sure that people could realise what happened to the rest of your family.
Yeah, but we managed to get two sisters of my mother's side, Fanny and Bertha, out of Germany, and they lived in Golders Green until they died a natural death.
Now, as we move into 39 then, so you're St. John's ambulance chap, and you're working by then for this chemical firm in the offices. So what's happening in the lead up to war? How do you feel about what do you understand of what's happening? What happened?
What happened when?
In 39.
Well, I wanted to get into the army.
Before the war started?
Before the war started.
Now why? Can you just explain? I think I know, but can you explain
why?
Well,
I wanted to repay Britain for what they'd done and given shelter to my parents and my sister and myself. And they said, well, you can join the ARP organization. But as far as the army is concerned...
Right, now hang on. Did you join the ARP?
ARP, yes.
Well, before we got in the army, let's do that, because otherwise...
I became actually a driver for Fulham Hospital. Fulham Hospital mobile surgery unit. I drove a huge furniture van which had nothing but medical equipment inside.
So that was an actual mobile... They were getting ready for war, in other words.
That was before the war.
And what was the setup of this van? Who was in the van? So it was you driving it, that was your job.
I was a driver.
And
for
what was the team in the mobile surgery?
It was a doctor, two nurses, and that's right, I think that was there were several doctors available, but I mean, when we went out later on, you know, because the first few weeks we thought Germans would come over right away, we went to certain places and see...
Hang on, is this the mobile surgery?
In this unit, where if we were needed in the East End, but nothing happened much until, as you know, that blitzkrieg.
That continued over into the war. And was it technically part of the ARP? Air raid precautions.
Yes, we were getting full training there at the same time, and.
So, what was your ARP training?
It was how to see to it that the blackouts were always up in places, public places and private houses, and. That was a tremendous job because people were a bit careless and the blackout was not observed as strictly as it should have done.
But this is before the war. So
yes, that's right, before the war.
Now, you hadn't joined the army then,
no,
before the war started.
No.
So what do you remember of the day war broke out, 3rd of September 1939? Did you hear the
I helped with the evacuation of the... two school children. I had to report with a little armband around the arm.
Now, was that so? That's what you did. You didn't hear the broadcast.
That was as part of the ARP movement.
Did you hear the broadcast?
Oh yes.
What did you think of it? And what did you think of the fact that war had been declared? I mean, were you pleased or were you sad? Or what did you feel?
Well, I felt very upset about Sir John Anderson, who was Home Secretary, because he had said publicly about all those aliens, or enemy aliens, as we were called, had not been naturalized by that time. And...
But did that happen on the day the war broke out, Anderson's statement?
Yes. He said, intern the bloody lot and send them to the Isle of Man. That was Sir John Anderson's remark in Parliament.
When?
Just as war broke out. You know, the first thing, we must intern all the enemy aliens, even if they are claiming that they are refugees from Nazi oppression, and turn the bloody lot.
And you found that offensive?
Ben?
You found that offensive?
Oh, yes. and I was very disappointed because I found the English quite different from the French. The French were very pessimistic and unwilling to fight. And when Hitler said that I bombed the Eiffel Tower, you know, they immediately asked for armistice.
Now, so, but what about the outbreak of war itself? How did you feel about? I mean, I understand you being annoyed by Anderson, but what about the fact you were now at war with your home?
Well, I was very pessimistic also about England didn't seem to be ready for and prepared for it. Was Hitler had prepared for that war for several years. And I thought, well, if England loses this war, then of course that's curtains for the whole of the Landsberg family as well. And there was no question about it. And then...
Now, tell me about this. You helped evacuate Jewish school children.
No, not Jewish children, no.
Just school children. You said
the poor children from the East End.
So everybody. Tell me about that. What did you actually do as an
ARP? We had to go to Hoxton, you know, the real deepest of East End. And there arrived these kids, some dirty, some clean, some with running noses, some with nothing to carry. Others had... suitcases they could hardly manage to carry, and you had to carry them for them and took them to the trains at I think it was King's Cross. We got there by coaches
from Hoxton. And what was the mood of the children?
They thought it was was great fun. The teachers were not so optimistic as the children. The children thought that was wonderful. They had never been away from home, you know. And when we got to the countryside...
You went with them to the country?
Oh, yes. We had to go on the train with them and see that nobody opened the window or opened the door or fell out of the train and things like that. And when we got to the countryside...
And where did you go? Do you remember?
Yes. I must ask my wife. She probably remembers better. It was real countryside, and they had never seen cows before in fields, only on pictures, some of them. They couldn't believe it. And then they stood on the marketplace, and... then the local people had to come and pick their children whom they would give shelter for, you know. And of course, most of them looked so dirty. And in the end, we were left with about 20 of them. Nobody wanted them. They looked dirty, had scabies and all sorts of little noticeable disorders. And in the end... the mayor arranged for those unwanted, really unwanted kids to find homes for them. And then we went back to London. Let me ask my wife just quickly. It was real countryside, and it was very nice countryside too. And the local people seemed to be quite quite prepared for this, especially if the kids looked clean. They took them very quickly, and later on, unfortunately, as the Germans did not bomb London, the kids drifted back to London to their homes without permission. You know, the parents came and collected them, said there was nothing happening, and then, of course, the Blitz started that winter.
Now, what about, did you have any other ARP duties in the first months of the war before you enlisted? You mentioned the blackout. Were you going around enforcing that?
Where?
The blackout. Were you enforcing that?
Oh, yes. Blackout was when I was doing ARP work.
Yeah, tell me about the blackout. Did you go out as an ARP warden enforcing the blackout?
Yes, well, I was an ARP warden myself, and two or three of us always went together. We had to be very diplomatic, you know, that people did not sort of be offensive, because after all the Englishman's home was castled and so on.
And the air raids hadn't started.
Exactly.
So what sort of, could you see the lights from the houses? I mean...
Well, they said, well, you're overreacting. That is, was the answer. And most people at the time, there's nothing happening. What are you making all that fuss for? And, well, I said, this is a law, and blackout has to be enforced. And although we couldn't predict it would happen so soon, you know, in that winter of 1939-40, and most people seem to understand and do something about it.
Did you have any other duties as an ARP warden?
Oh, yes.
Were you still driving the ambulance?
Oh, yes. Whenever I wasn't driving this furniture van, you know, this converted furniture van with all these things in it, we had to go and, let's see, blackout observance.
Did you have an ARP post you had to report to?
Oh, yes.
What was the ARP post like? How was it set up?
Oh, it was more an amusement arcade. You know, we were playing, we were throwing darts and things most of the time. You know, it was an unreal world, really.
How many would there be there? I mean, how many?
Oh, about 30, 40 in the east end of London. And round Edmonton were perhaps half the number,
and would you have, what equipment would you have in there? Just a telephone, was it, or was it more?
Well, apart from our uniform, uniform was not all that enforced. We had the armband, blackout observant, or seeing that the children who were supposed to be taken to the countryside. Oh, I know now. It was Luton we took them to. And it was crazy because next to Luton were lots of car factories, and they were all of, we knew or thought they were on a list of the German Luftwaffe as priority targets. And it was a crazy idea to take them to Luton, of all places. But they had some fields there with cows in it and so on. That now made it...
Now, you were still working at the chemical factory, in the offices of the chemical...
Yes.
Did the war affect your work at work at all? You know, in other words, your duties at work?
Say it again?
Did the war affect your work for the chemical... industry, because you were working.
Yes, it did. Because
how did it affect?
Yes, they said as you're not naturalized, it's very difficult for us to keep you. But as you have applied to go into the army, we keep you until you get actually admitted. You know.
Now you were non-naturalized German.
I was stateless then.
Now, can you tell me? So, how did you have to register? What was the process as a German alien, according to John Anderson?
Yes, you had to go to the police regularly.
Now, what happened when you registered? What was the process when you first registered?
You had to register, and the police were very nice because most of them knew me from some of the work that I was doing. And
you mean with the ARP?
Yes, and. Fulham. I then lived with my parents in Fulham, off Fulham Palace Road, in a flat there. And the Fulham police were very nice and very understanding.
And what did it mean? What did you have to do, isn't it? What you'd registered.
They weren't
interning people at that stage. There were different grades, weren't there?
Well, you must not leave the district. You must not move out. Or if you do move, you must let us know where you're going to. And I'm afraid it could be that we may have to ask you to report here and see where stateless people, or as were officially called, enemy aliens, have to be placed.
So now you'd apply to join the army. You mentioned that.
Yes.
Tell me about that. How would you apply? Because there were rules about it.
We go to the Home Office, and the Home Office passed a letter on to the War Office, and the War Office asked me to report to Kitchener Camp near Sandwich.
Now, I thought you had to have people sponsoring you.
Oh, yes. You had to have three letters from three British citizens, and I got one from Squadron Leader Brackley, Lord Reading, and Sir Robert Mond.
And when did you actually volunteer to join the army?
Almost on the first day of war.
So how long was it before they called you up?
Oh, it was not until December we reported in...
Of 39?
Yes, 39.
And so during that period, you were allowed to carry on working in the chemical firm?
Yes.
Even though you were not naturalised?
And also doing this ARP work.
Anything you remember about that 3 months? Anything else about that 3 months before you joined?
I just wondered what my parents would be doing, and they actually they found some place in Newbury, you know,
I thought they were living in Fulham. Hang on.
Yes, they left their flat and moved to Newbury.
And where did you stay? You stayed in Fulham.
I didn't move with them. They stayed in. My sister didn't move with them either, because she had this job with this family, looking after their baby. Newbury, they stayed for part of the early part of the war. You know, after the Blitz.
But did anything, so any stories of anything that happened between, so your ARP work, you must have been busy.
Yeah.
So this is the next thing when you're called up in December.
Yes.
So tell me about the call-up. What happened with the call-up? Where did you have to go?
We had to go to, I think it was Victoria Station, and there were a huge lot of numbers of young men, they're waiting, and some officers in uniform and ordinary soldiers were putting us into groups of 10 and 20, and we got on the trains to Sandwich. And when we arrived there, they had to march like soldiers. Of course, we must have looked a terrible lot along the country road to the camp.
Now, you said Kitchener Camp.
Yes, it was in Lord Kitchener had a camp there in the First World War, and the huts had still been maintained to a certain way, but the rain was coming through, and we had to rebuild it more or less.
I'll come back to that. And this is at Richborough.
Richborough.
Right. Now, what was your reception like, you know, when you arrived? Because you're a civilian up to that point.
Local people were very suspicious of it, because lots of us spoke German to each other in the streets or in the pubs and things like that, which was very stupid, but some of them could only speak
Were you
German.
All German alien, so-called, you know, German?
And the local people were very suspicious of it.
Were you all German, ex-German?
And
were you all?
No. There were lots of them from Hungary, from Eastern Europe.
No, but what I mean is, sorry, were they all so-called enemy aliens then?
Oh, yes.
Right. So the whole call-up. And were you with the Pioneer Corps? Did you know you were with the Pioneer Corps already?
Yes.
So you were joining the Pioneer Corps at Kitchener Camp.
Kitchener Camp.
Was this where you joined 93 Company or 93
yes.
Pioneer?
There had been evidently a month or two before, and they formed 88 Company, And before that, there were three companies, I think 67, 88, and 93. And we were on our way to France within 6 weeks.
I'll come to that. So you, the local population were very suspicious.
Not friendly at all. And
how did they show that?
And from time to time, the police stopped one or two people, you know, in case there were fifth columnists and things like that. It was not a very, very salubrious atmosphere.
Now, what about your reception from the army? How did they treat you? You know?
Very good. I remember my sergeant major. He was his name was Woolard. He was quite. He was a soldier from the First World War. He was quite despondent when he gave us orders, you know, left, right, and all this, and some people stand to attention, stand at ease, and all this, and people didn't seem to understand sometimes what he was saying.
Was he a good instructor? I mean, was he friendly?
Oh, he called us all sorts of... Your mothers must have been a make mistake when they gave birth to you and all this. And he swore. We used language which we never, some of us had never heard before.
Were the other instructors like him?
But he meant well, because when they were ready to go after 6 weeks.
I'll come to. Was he fair?
Ben?
Was he fair to you? You know, fair. Fair.
Fair. Oh, yes, he was not...
He didn't pick on people.
He was not vindictive or anything like this. He was a good soldier.
What about the other instructors? Or did you only have him?
Oh, no, we had others, also others.
And what were they like?
I think the officers, too, they felt sorry for some of the chaps who couldn't understand the English orders. And some of them... nobody was actually vindictive or anything like this.
Now, what was your accommodation like in these huts? What were these old huts like? Because they're, 20, 30 years old then, 20 years old. What state were they in? You said you had to start rebuilding. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, the men.
The huts.
The huts, they were small, sort of prefabricated type of huts, and the roofs leaking. And water supply was poor, you know, had to be repaired. And meals were I was often on kitchen fatigue for not being dressed properly, you know, as punishment. And
but what was the food like? Was it good or bad?
It was sufficient. Nobody went hungry, but some of them didn't like it. But of course, a lot of them were spoiled, you know. A lot of the chaps were spoiled with having had quite different lifestyle. But they got used to army food and army barracks and being told what to do without having to ask why or why not and so on.